Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up? Welcome in. Wes Mitchell, Chris Clark, GC Live, Wednesday episode of the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Plenty to talk about here. And we are once again in the portal giveth stage. Obviously, in today's college football world, if you're a Gamecock fan, if you're a college football fan, you're constantly just waffling back and forth from the portal taketh, the portal giveth. South Carolina, two big receiver commitments out of the transfer portal. On Tuesday, that will be the primary couple of talking points for the show today. We'll probably maybe get into a couple of other things as well. But first, let us tell you about our friend Clint Hammond of Movement Mortgage. ClintHammond.com, 803-422-6797. That is Clint's cell phone. Again, as always, if you're not in the market to buy a home or thinking about buying a home, you don't have to call Clint. All we ask is that if you are considering your options about buying a house here in South Carolina or even in some neighboring states, give Clint a shout, 803-422-6797. Look at his background and some of the options on ClintHammond.com as well. He's a mortgage broker here in Columbia and the surrounding areas. He's going to take great care of you just like he took care of me. And before we get into some other details, also want to remind you about our special ongoing on Gamecock Central. This is a GC Live sort of YouTube podcast, however you hear us, special. We don't really publish this elsewhere. This is for you guys. If you're not a subscriber on GamecockCentral.com, come on over. New subs, $1 for the first 2 months. So that's not $1 each. That's just $1, 2 months. Use code SCAR1, S-C-A-R-1. Again, welcome in. Wednesday show. Plenty to get to, plenty to talk about. Chris, we got to start with the addition of two new wide receivers to the South Carolina roster. And before we dive into each of these guys individually, and then we'll sort of try to provide some context on where we think they're going to fit, I think important to recognize, if you go back to like that final press conference at the end of the spring, Shane Beamer was asked, hey, what's the direction you're going to take in this portal window? And he pointed to two positions, wide receiver, offensive line. We'll see if South Carolina additionally adds a guy on the O-line or not. It's been a little bit more quiet on that end, but it was apparent, man, us tracking this, us doing our watch list. From the very moment we started talking portal, wide receiver targets started popping up.
Yeah, Wes, I mean, we heard a bunch of names that kind of, you know, immediately hit the radar. And then, of course, not all those names were in the portal immediately. Some, you know, hey, this guy just hit the portal. Now he becomes a name to watch. Vandrevious Jacobs, once he hit the portal, was a very quick turnaround, right? Where within, you know, a day or two of him hitting the portal, there's an official visit scheduled. And you kind of got the sense that things were going to be a little bit more, I guess, condensed is the best word, in this portal window. It's a much shorter one. What, 15 days? There is, to your point, to back up a little bit, guys don't have to be committed by today. There's some guys that put their names in the portal. Heck, there's some guys that could even trickle out because compliance departments have up to 48 hours to put a name in once it's been submitted. You could see, hey, such and such is in the portal, and you might see it on May 2nd, on Thursday, right? And then from there, they don't necessarily have to commit or pick a school. But we knew that the activity was going to be a smaller amount, number one, because for South Carolina, you're not going for, you know, you're going for one, two positions, basically, and you've got a lesser amount of guys that you're actually recruiting. But we knew that receiver would be, while the overall activity smaller, receiver would be one where there's a lot, right? There's a lot packed into that one position. Several names we were monitoring. And, you know, Vandrevious Jacobs, like I said, was one that very quickly they were able to turn around with a visit. Delvon Campbell out of Nevada was one, Wes, that as he, you know, he came up early in the process because he had been in the portal. We figured, hey, this is a guy to watch. It took a little bit longer to get the visit scheduled in a relative sense, but they got that one scheduled as well. So those were the priority positions, and now you look at it, and they've kind of hit their marks there.
Yeah, and I think getting two guys, that was something we also heard early on. Like you heard receiver being mentioned, and you know, you don't know, is that one, two, three? And what does that actually entail? And very early on, we heard if South Carolina could find two that they wanted, that they were going to try to get two guys. And I think it's important to walk that line between overall numbers, right? Like sometimes you are taking guys when you talk about depth. Like I like depth, Chris, is a word that's thrown around quite a bit. And I thought the way Beamer put it was very subtle, but also deliberate, I think, when he said, look, we don't have the numbers we need at receiver. We don't have the numbers we need on the offensive line. Now, if we don't get guys, that doesn't mean we're going to panic. I don't think that means you take guys just to take them. But I do think that's a good way to sort of frame it up. Like when you take guys out of the portal, for the most part, especially at wide receiver, you're wanting them to come in and make an impact. But you simultaneously, you don't want to send the same message to your current guys, to your wide receivers. You don't want to send a message that says, hey, we don't believe in you. So I think pointing to the overall numbers there, pointing to sort of every coach in the country, every program in the country, there's a particular number you want at every single position. And it is true. South Carolina needed some numbers at that wide receiver position, especially when you start looking at scholarship guys and sort of hitting that exact sort of little window. And now you add two guys on paper, they've done that part.
Yeah, they have. And I think the overall goal this year, you know, it really two things. You know, you lose Xavier Leggett. And when you look back at 2023, to be honest, when he wasn't on the field, you just look around and go, you know, where are the threats, like the big threats? And there just wasn't a lot there, right? Because you've got Nicholas Harbor, who's a freshman. You've got some former walk-ons. You got a lot of young guys, right? You got, you know, Tyshawn Russell's a true freshman. You got a Luke Doty, who proved himself to be quite reliable, but is not a full-time receiver. You know, even now, Wes, you know, as experienced as he is, you're kind of still with Luke Doty. Hey, he could still play some quarterback. He's still getting some work at quarterback in practice. And so the amount of competitive depth that you had there at receiver is not what you wanted. And man, I was almost surprised at how frank Beamer was after the season with that, of just kind of explaining why he decided to tweak the coaching staff. Hey, from a recruiting standpoint, he said, we're playing guys that Coach Muschamp recruited. You know, Xavier Leggett was one of those guys. And so he felt like they had to get a lot better on the recruiting front. This day and age, Wes, yeah, you got to recruit the high school receivers really well. You've said that a lot. And you need to develop those guys and recruit guys that can play early, like Amazio Bennett. It looks like he's going to factor in early. But you also can't go all in on that, because you have to make sure that you go ahead and flip that room. And so the transfer portal does afford you that opportunity. You need to develop guys that are on campus already, like a Harbor, right? You need to, Tyshawn Russell, others, you need to bring in some freshmen and start developing them and see if they can get on the field. And then you need to get receivers. Now, for South Carolina, it's a little bit more extreme because they need more help. They are trying to find, all right, who's the guy or the two guys or the three guys, and then at the same time simultaneously add to the depth. So now you look at it, they brought in two freshman receivers in Bennett and Gatling. And they've gotten a total between the two transfer portal windows of five transfer portal receivers. And four of those five, Wes, have a pretty good amount of playing experience and some proven production at different schools.
Yeah, so let's dive into the two newest ones, of course, both committing to South Carolina on Tuesday. I would say the guy most equipped at this point to make that immediate impact would be Delvon Campbell, Nevada's leading receiver. Really put up big numbers the last 2 years, and he's someone, he started out at Illinois, transferred to Nevada, kind of, you know, had to find his way into college, but was able to put up numbers, Chris. I would say if you really dive into that Nevada team, not a great team this past year. Seems like they had some quarterback struggles. Seems like this was a deal where he put up some numbers and was probably saying, look, I got 1 year where I can go try to find a SEC or ACC or Big Ten, you know, try to find some little bit bigger conference and a quarterback who can get me the football and go make a bigger name for myself. And I think, Chris, we talk about traits a lot of times on this show. And generally when I talk traits, I'm talking like I'm going to talk about with Jacobs here in a minute. When I talk traits, I'm talking upside more than likely. And it's like, all right, this guy has the traits to develop into the type of player you're looking for to make an impact. With Campbell, generally, you know, you're talking about a one-year guy. You're probably saying they might not quite have the upside as the younger player. However, I think the more we've learned about this guy, the more there are definitely some traits here. The 6'4 stands out because we've talked about it. Fans have talked about it. It's they need size, right? Just because for whatever reason, to this point, this room is smaller than most. Well, you kind of dive into his skill set a little bit more and you find out, well, Campbell can run as well. Like, probably a little bit more of a long strider because he is a taller guy, but he does have some of that deep speed, the ability to make plays down the field, which I think just from a standpoint of wanting to diversify your receiver room, he brings some things that maybe just weren't quite present with the rest of that room, except maybe for a Nick Harbor, who, as we know, has spent the spring, rightfully so, but as far as football terms, it has to be pointed out, focused on track.
Well, you mentioned traits. It makes me always think of Xavier Leggett. You know, he's a guy that it didn't click for until literally his last season. And when it clicked, it hit in a big way. And I think that's the reason that, like, people that really paid close attention to the program and knew about Xavier and what he could do athletically didn't ever really give up on him. You know, if Xavier Leggett was a guy that just looked like he did, you know, physically very impressive, but he had like never flashed, or if you didn't know that he could run sub 4.4 in the 40, if he's like a 4.6 guy, you know, we would have gone into last season and been like, Xavier Leggett's just probably never going to do anything. You know, you might have had that opinion and that would have been fair. But what you knew is he has flashed, and he's not 6'1", Wes. There's no way. I don't believe in the NFL draft. 6'2", 6'3", 220 pounds, can jump, can run. You know, he's sub 4.4. Like, he knew all those things, could make incredible catches. And so it did finally hit that last year. And so, you know, you always love the idea of taking guys with traits. It may not always hit in year one. And so Campbell is actually a really interesting kind of case study in that, because here's a guy who played big time Texas football in Houston, played, one of his high school teammates was Devon Achane. He signed with Illinois, so he got that Big Ten offer out of high school. Didn't click for him, so he kind of stepped back a level. Nevada's offense was very bad. Last season, Wes, Xavier Leggett had more receiving touchdowns by himself than Nevada as a team throughout the course of the year. But yet, he still did some things. And you look at his size. You look at, he was 10-7 in the 100 meters as a high school prospect. You look at some of the catches he made in games, and you go, okay, I think this could translate to the SEC level. So if he comes in, you develop him, he picks up everything, this is a guy that has traits to where you're like, this is potentially even a next-level guy who could come in and help you a lot.
Yeah, and I think, Chris, when this name first popped up, I was sort of slotting him more like, all right, that might be a depth guy. You know, not really sure if he's an instant impact guy, but the more I sort of read and went into his background and, you know, the 10-7 in the 100, the stuff like that, I think you start to see, all right, this is a guy who's going to push and is certainly coming here with 1 year to go to push for a starting position. I think it would be very, very difficult for me right now to produce an accurate depth chart or even a projected depth chart for sure in terms of what this thing is going to look like. I guess we're 3-4 months from preseason camp and then the season starting, just because you have increased the competition in that room. I do think for the most part, when they've added depth there, it's not just literally that idea of depth like we've talked about with the offensive line. There may be the potential to add a guy from the portal that is truly just depth. Like, hey, this guy might be a second teamer when he gets here, third teamer even potentially, but you're trying to literally increase the depth. The depth that I think certainly Campbell provides is that you're talking about depth that is fighting for a starting spot and potentially ready to make an impact. It, I think, also will open things up for those other guys. Obviously, Gage Larvadan probably, I would say, produced the most attention this spring in terms of the transfer guys. We heard Jared Brown create some excitement. At least Beamer mentioned him in two straight scrimmages, which I think is noteworthy. A lot of those guys, Chris, played a lot of slot before, especially Jared Brown. Adding someone like this, who I think is a true outside wide receiver, would potentially open South Carolina up to being able to play those other guys a little bit more just in the slot if they have to. If I think the ifs right now kind of are, is Campbell able to take another step with maybe a little bit better quarterback, a little bit better talent around him? Is Nick Harbor able to take a step once he kind of dives into football this summer? Can a Jared Brown or a Gage Larvadan give you some of those things on the outside, which we know they can already give you in the slot? We saw them do quite a bit of that, or heard about them doing quite a bit of that this spring. So I think there are still questions about this position group, but by adding these two guys, the questions are a little bit more towards, okay, what does it look like? But you feel a little bit better about those questions being answered one way or another, as opposed to it being one of those things where it's a question, meaning everybody's just ducking for cover, like they're that worried about this position.
Yeah, you always think about with receiver, you think of kind of your top six. You know, some years you're going to have a lead dog who has way more catches than everybody else. We've seen that at South Carolina. We've also seen years where it's a little bit more evenly spread out because you had a quality room that had some depth to it. We don't know what that's going to look like yet. And, you know, we don't really know what the top six will look like. You know, two or three starters, depending on the package, then three other guys you can really count on to rotate. Really, when you look at receiver rotations, at most places, you're not going to look up and down and say, oh, those 10 guys kind of split snaps. You just don't really see that a lot, frankly. So I agree with you. There are, you know, you don't want your top six to be, okay, well, we don't really know who our top six is. It's going to be some people out of necessity. You know, you just got to have one. You want it to be more like, we don't really know who it is because we don't know how this competition is going to play out. So now what you've done is you've gotten some guys who return from the roster, Harbor, Doty, Tyshawn Russell, Elijah Caldwell, etc. You pair those guys with your two freshmen, and Mazio Bennett had a good spring. Gatling, we'll see, you know, what he can do year one. He was banged up a little bit in spring. And then five transfers, Wes. And again, five transfers who four of them have played, as I said earlier, a lot of college ball. Different school, different system, yes, but very experienced guys. So you can start kind of piecing together what it could look like. And there are still some questions in there. But, man, before the last portal window, you're sitting there going, I don't know what this thing's going to look like. You at least have a little bit more clarity now.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right, let's get into Vandrevious Jacobs, the other transfer portal commit for South Carolina. kid out of Florida State, and someone that I think is not necessarily your typical transfer portal addition. Most of these guys at this point, not all of them, but a lot of them, especially this second window, you're talking about guys with one, a lot of times 1 year of eligibility left, sometimes two. But with him, Chris, I think this is a little bit more akin to just adding almost like an additional late high school guy. Of course, there aren't four-star wide receivers that are in high school just floating around in April, May, waiting on you to sign them. So you wouldn't have been able to add a high school guy at this point. But getting someone, he redshirted last year, did play a little bit, caught three balls, 60 yards, a touchdown, got at least, I would call it a taste, which for some guys, like that's, you don't sit there and say, oh, he's experienced, but you also don't sit there and say he's never ran out there in front of 70,000 people. He's done that part. So that is somewhat helpful. Now, when all this transfer portal stuff first started, Chris, I would have said there's an even bigger advantage, and that would be that he's already used his one-time transfer. Now, we know that that's not really the case anymore. Everybody can transfer at will almost at this point, the way things are. But still, I think he's a guy that there's probably a wide range in terms of what your expectations should be for him in year one. Like, would it shock me if it took a little bit of time for him to sort of get settled in and sort of make an impact and be a guy? No, that wouldn't shock me at all. It also would not shock me if he came in, sort of used this opportunity as motivation, and, you know, he transferred out of Florida State, didn't work out. He was an in-state guy there, probably was very excited to play for an in-state school. It just did not work out. Use this to go about his business the right way and potentially step into a starter's role. Like, I do think there's the upside, the ability there for him to go be a playmaker for this team. And also, it looks like in his past, he's been a punt return, kick return guy too. So maybe is an option in those roles as well.
Yeah, I think there's some added value with Jacobs because, you know, if it was his final year, you'd go, okay, you know, this guy's played some ball and he's got this skill set and he can come help. But the fact that he's a multi-year guy out of the portal, former four-star guy, highly recruited, that's a positive. And yeah, you're exactly right. You know, watching some FSU stuff on YouTube about him with some of Mike Norvell's comments, you could see him back there in practice, you know, fielding punts and things like that. So he's got that ability. Maybe he can get in the mix for that. We'll see. But what you hear about him is, you know, yeah, he doesn't fit that profile that they were kind of looking for in the portal of, you remember we heard Wes, probably going to be 6'2 or over to kind of fit the bill. Well, Delvon Campbell fits that bill in a big way. Jacobs is more of a guy that you look at and he's just a good player. Like, he's someone that you just look at and, hey, this guy can help us out. He can run. He's not small, you know, at 6 feet tall. He can really run. He's got ball skills. He's got some, I think, versatility about him. And I've also heard, Wes, that he's got a pretty high football IQ. So this is a guy that probably can step in and I think pick things up early in Columbia.
Yeah, and I like that last point there, Chris, that, yeah, I know fans wanted size, and I think South Carolina wanted size as well, and they obviously added that with Campbell. But I think you're also just looking to get better. Like, frankly, if you have – Beamer's always said, look, if there's a guy who can make our team better, we're going to look at possibly adding them. And I think with him, for one, 6 foot is definitely not 5'8", 5'9". Like, you have some length to you if you are Jacobs. And it's not 6'4", or 6'5", either, but you're talking about more of just an average-size wide receiver. You wouldn't call him short. And then just there is playmaking ability here. So I think when you saw a playmaker, the opportunity to add him, there was obviously interest from him. There was obviously mutual interest on the South Carolina side as well. So it just makes sense. If there were a couple of guys out there who were 6'5", running – Nick Harbor times, they're probably not chilling in the portal, frankly. So I think going out, getting a playmaker, somebody who's looking for a fresh start, it certainly makes sense. And, you know, I'll be very curious. I wish he was here for spring ball, because this is a guy that we talk about putting our eyes on, guys. We know in fall preseason, it's even a little bit more shut down than it is in spring. He's someone I would love to just be able to put eyes on and sort of see how he looks physically compared to some of these other guys on the South Carolina roster. But I hate using the word intriguing or interesting, because it's a throwaway word.
Oh, yeah.
I'm guilty of it. A lot of times you hear people just, it's interesting. Why is it interesting? What makes it interesting? But it is interesting. It is intriguing in that there's a little bit of an unknown, because he is still very young in his college development. But that also means there's upside. There's not even, maybe I'm looking the wrong spots. There's not even a lot of updated huddle video on him out there as well. So there's a little bit of an unknown as far as what he brings to the team. But I do like some of the things I've heard.
Yeah, and there's actually, Wes, I think there's a workaround to the huddle problem. There's a company called Quick Cut that is a huddle competitor, and I think they have some film on Jacobs. Maybe his high school uses it or something. I actually saw, and I can't properly credit our guy, but there's a guy on YouTube that does a lot of like prospect reaction videos to their highlight films, and he did one, and I noticed it was Quick Cut stuff. But, you know, this is kind of your – another thing I hate to do, Wes, is generalize. Like, this guy's from Florida, so he's a great athlete. But, you know, there is something to that a lot of the times. And Jacobs is like kind of that prototypical like Florida athlete. You know, like he can run. He just knows how to play the game. So I'm with you there. I use the word intriguing way too much, I think. But I get excited about football stuff and sports stuff and recruiting stuff. And so I'm intrigued by Jacobs because there's a little bit more of an unknown with what he can do, like you said. With Campbell, I'm intrigued because I feel like he's a little bit more of a known commodity with like what he can do, his style of play. I'm more intrigued because like, what does it look like when you take his skill set and move him up a level, and hopefully for South Carolina, put him in a better offense than the one that he's been playing in as well. Look at that, Wes. Vandrevious Jacobs, Quick Cut.
I'm learning about the Quick Cut here on the fly here, Chris.
On the fly. There you go. Yeah.
We'll see. Hold on. Let me get this banner off for you guys. If you're on the audio version of the show, what are you doing with your life? We're on the YouTube, we're on the Facebook, we're on Twitter, X, all that stuff. So video way better. But let's just enjoy some clips here together, guys. So ball skills here, obviously, Chris, and smooth route runner. Plays on the outside, it appears. And this, I believe, is senior film. Now, one thing Charles Power points out to us is that wide receivers, very hard to, unless the guy's just like that five-star freakazoid that's just better than everybody else, there's a lot of high school film floating around of just very good high school athletes who just go make plays. And the big thing is trying to distinguish who can make that jump, make that leap at the college level, Chris.
Yeah, it is one of those tough positions to evaluate off film. It's kind of, DB is kind of similar, Wes. You know, you're looking, all right, where is the guy? You know, sometimes you got bad film. Where is he? What's his technique? And so a lot of times with receivers, with DBs, a lot of situations where, I mean, college coaches and guys like Charles, I mean, they want to be able to see guys in person as much as possible. Always get really irritated when people are like, camps don't matter. Well, they matter to everybody who evaluate players for a living. They matter to college coaches. You know, you can say, well, a camp isn't real football or whatever. No, it's not a football game. But when you're talking about evaluating players, it certainly matters. And there's a reason that the NFL Combine is an entire industry, basically, you know, and that's even less activity than camps. Like, camps are a lot more competitive and have more actual football going on within them than even the NFL Combine. So you want to get a guy in and be able to measure him and be able to see what are his athletic metrics and is he coachable and how does he move? How does he run routes? Because highlight films are just that, highlights. And even for colleges that have access to full games and they can cut up the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, you still want to be able to have guys in. But with Jacobs, you know, he has now some collegiate experience too. And, you know, the college coaching community, Wes, guys talk. And so you can find out how a guy's done since he's been at a place and get a little bit more data there as well.
What are you seeing here, man? I mean, again, it's high school film, but
that's right.
He's pretty good, man. Like, he's got some down the field ability to adjust to the ball. Pretty explosive runner as well. Creates yards after the catch. I kind of like how it looks like when he gets sort of into that second part of his route, if he's running like a deeper post or a fly, like he's got maybe that fifth gear where he kind of just outruns the guy when he has to turn it on. And even has some physicality as well. There are a couple of plays here where he was running through tackles. There's a play where they motioned him and just put him in the backfield at running back, and he ran through a couple of tackles. For the most part, seems to operate on the outside, which again is, I think, something South Carolina needs. That's something that, they've got a lot of kind of slot guys. Here you see him after the catch again, finding the end zone. And one thing I also feel like sometimes with receivers, good hands catch there, we almost forget, do you catch the football? how many times when people talk about wide receivers is the first thing they say, oh, he's 6'4". We're guilty of that with Campbell. Oh, yep. He's fast. He's big and fast. Oh, he's athletic. Blah, blah, blah. Do you catch the football? Should be priority number one, I feel like. And obviously, again, this is a highlight, so they're not going to show if he dropped 5 passes in one of these games. But I think that's something you have to try to tell, and something you can tell in person with the evaluation as well. How naturally do they reach out, trust their hands to catch the football away from their body as opposed to being a body catcher?
Yeah, and that's a great point. I was actually joking with you about that this week, Wes, and talking to somebody about receivers and about the evaluation process and how it continually came up. You know, hey, this guy can run, this guy can catch. And it was almost funny because you're like, well, yeah, he can catch, he's a receiver. But then you back up and go, okay, actually, that is quite important. You know, when you're evaluating a receiver, you want the hands, like you said, a hands catcher. You know, the highlight reel catches are great. Delvon Campbell, to go back to him, I mean, I was kind of cobbling together some stuff on him the other day, and he had a one-hander in a game last year that was incredible. And those things are cool, but also, are you consistently catching the football? You know, can you run a slant and catch one that is coming in hot? And do it consistently at a high level with somebody in your face. That's important. And I think from what you see on Jacob's film, he does that. You asked, Wes, what I saw in the film. Definitely the hands catching, the natural hands. Doesn't seem to fight the ball. Really good after the catch in space, but also just really does a good job of separating. That's another thing. Like, a lot of guys can run fast straight line when they get going, when they get ahead of steam, but can you get going? Can you get off the line? Can you separate from defensive backs? And I think that's something you see from Jacobs on his film as well.
No doubt. Shout out to Mr. Attaway, Oscar Attaway Jr. Hope you're doing well, sir. And shout out to Craig. Says he just joined Garnet Trust for $20 and a cent, 2001. Good job there, Craig. And I do want to remind everyone, Garnet Trust, if you're listening to us live, you got about 2 hours and 19 minutes before the match campaign is over. And Garnet Trust, you guys have pushed to the very end here. pushed it on over the top. $500,000 match, half of that going to women's basketball, half that going to men's basketball. And as of yesterday, very, very close to hitting that goal. And every little bit helps, but you look at it like this. You can do a one-time donation on GarnetTrust.com right now, and you can pick men's basketball or women's basketball, and then that's going to be essentially doubled up to that $500,000 total because of the match by a few very, very generous donors. And, Chris, that stuff really, really helps. There's no – it's not a coincidence that's going on at the same time as the basketball transfer portal window is ending actually today. Football transfer portal window just ended for non-grad transfers. It ends today for grad transfers. We know there's a lot of minutiae to just keep up with, but for basketball, men and women's, portal supposed to be ending today. Not a coincidence that push was during this portal window.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, Wes, you think about any sport, you know, especially basketball, you think about Dawn Staley, the level she recruits at and has recruited at even pre-NIL era. And you think about what Lamont Paris has been able to do in both the high school ranks and the transfer portal. You know, there's a lot of credit to go around for that. Ultimately, those coaches and their staff deserve a ton of credit. But you know, Garnet Trust has been huge. I mean, call it like it is. In this era of college athletics, we can say, I don't like this thing, I don't like that thing. The reality is, if you don't have a strong NIL program for all your sports, but zoom in on whatever individual one you want, you're going to struggle to recruit. And if you can't attract and then retain your big-time talent that you get in the program, you're not going to have as good of players as the others, and ultimately it's going to be hard, you know, at the level that these teams compete at, baseball, basketball, women's basketball, football. And so Garnet Trust, those guys have done a tremendous job, and obviously the fan base has done a good job of helping maximize that as well.
No doubt. What's up, Travis? Hope you're doing well, man. And Chris, before we get out of here, I did want to sort of – I thought that's an interesting place to take it. There I go saying interesting again. That word is banned from the show from now on.
Okay.
No more interesting. But okay. I am at least going to tell you why it's interesting.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah, so at least show your work, right, if you use the word. And so with retention of rosters and this second window, we'll call it, for football, this spring window, and there was a lot of talk about they're going to be more just massive upheaval within the college football community in terms of guys transferring around. And there have obviously been guys that hit the portal. There, I saw one today, dude, that they had the little graphic that pops up, and on three you'll have like the previous school, and it's like three schools, and now the fourth school is in the new school window. I'm like, good grief. But anyway, I feel like South Carolina, and we don't know of anybody to keep an eye on that maybe is – like the deadline is over right now for non-grad transfers. There's still across the country you're going to see today, tomorrow, so-and-so has entered the portal, and that's because they informed their school by the deadline, but the school has 48 hours. To officially submit that paperwork. So there could be guys around the country, there will be sort of trickling in. We haven't been told, hey, watch out for this guy trickling in. Chris, maybe you have and haven't told me, but I haven't heard of anybody else to keep an eye on. Point I'm getting at is that it appears South Carolina has sort of survived, if you will, this transfer portal window in terms of all their major projected starters, their major projected impact guys staying out of the portal. I think a big part of that is good communication from Shane Beamer and staff about roles. And then a lot of that, frankly, we saw a bunch of Garnet Trust deals done in January and around that time, keeping your guys, keeping the resources in place to keep these guys happy. That, and in 2024, that's just a part of it. You're not going to keep your roster intact. You're not going to be able to add from the transfer portal if you don't have strong NIL resources on campus. That's just a fact.
You know, and let's think about football, Wes. So for Shane Beamer in South Carolina, you're trying to make an ascension up the SEC pecking order. And to be quite frank, a lot of the schools that you are chasing have big trophy cases, whether it's recently or in the not too distant past, that they can point to. Great tradition. There are great schools in the SEC that have had tremendous football programs, pockets of success, really consistent success, championships, SEC national championships. And to try to catch them, you also have to recruit against them. You have to go get a bunch of blue chippers. You know, there's never been a school that's won the national title or the SEC title where you look at the school and went, man, they just really kind of, you know, bootstrapped their way to that one. You know, you look at them and say they're really well coached and all those things, but you don't scrap your way to an SEC or national title. It doesn't happen. All those schools have amazing talent. So now you get to 2024 and even, you know, 2023, 2022, but since we're in 2024, you add in NIL. So literally, if you're a prospect, think about this. Let's take the Garnet and Black out of it. If you're a prospect and you've got SEC schools A, B, and C saying, come here, here's what we've got. We've got championships. Here's our trophy case. And we can put together this NIL package for you. Or option D, South Carolina, in there as well to go along with A, B, and C. Hey, come to South Carolina. Sorry, we can't really do anything on the NIL front, but would you just like us, right? What are you going to do? Take the Garnet and Black out of it. So you got to be on an even playing field with as many things as possible. And like it or not, you know, NIL is one of those things. And for the coaching staff too, you know, you want to be able to have as many things in your favor as possible. There, yes, some recruiters are better than others, but ultimately you got to have resources at places. That's why, you know, Wes, a lot of the nation's best recruiters are at the biggest blue blood schools because they have more resources to help them attract that talent. NIL is a big part of that as well now.
Yeah, it certainly is, man. And the system ain't perfect. It never has been. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of change coming to college ball. We'll see what all this looks like. But for right now, if you want to compete, that's the name of the game. But South Carolina has done a fantastic job. It doesn't stop here. Obviously, you got to keep pushing, but they have done a fantastic job of navigating the waters. And there are a lot of guys, I can tell you with 100% certainty, there are a lot of guys who were very much coveted by other schools that are on this roster. So to keep those guys in place is a big deal for South Carolina. And I would say, actually, Chris, an even bigger deal going back to that prior transfer portal window when you had SEC to SEC transfers allowed. It's still allowed, but you'd have to sit out a year. So really, in reality, it's not allowed. Nobody's probably going to do that if they think they're going to play, and that's why you're transferring anyway. So I think that's actually – we'll see if it would hold up if somebody tried to take that rule to court. Every other rule has not held up. But I think the no SEC to SEC in the spring is a very smart rule by the conference. At this point in the calendar, you don't want – your teams basically attacking each other this close to the season.
Yeah, it is a good rule. Now, how long will it be around? I don't know. Because, you know, if it gets challenged, NCAA's track record has not been great recently. They're kind of just, you know, flailing a little bit in the courtroom because they're losing cases constantly. You know, just saw today here on Wednesday, Wes, that a few other states have now joined in mirroring the Tennessee and Virginia lawsuit that ended up basically knocking out any semblance of NIL rules whatsoever for those states. So the NCAA has had to constantly update their guidance and things of that nature. So It's an interesting time now. I'm with you. Some changes are coming eventually to this model, but there's so much to work out to try to get it, you know, stabilized and something that everybody can agree on. Still probably, you know, a little bit away of a ways away from that solution.
Yeah, no doubt, man. So I think that's about it on the Gamecock world right now. We'll keep seeing. Are there some other guys that pop up? We'll see. Can't completely rule it out. And, you know, in terms of potential transfer portal additions. But for the most part, you're kind of getting to the point where as much as you can in 2024, you start to have a real feel for what this roster is actually going to be for this season, which I think is a good place for every team, for every coach, for every fan base to be at, because you can actually start to dream a little bit about what this team might potentially be capable of. And we can all break it down from there. In a big picture college football world though, Chris, what do you think of what's going on in Colorado? Like, I know this has been, it's been a fascinating journey to watch from the outside. At times you're like, man, they're going to fix this thing quick. They're going to pull it off. At other times you're like, this is going to be a disaster. It's been entertaining if nothing else, but when you have, and I haven't, there's an article in The Athletic, I guess, that's created a lot of this discussion about players who were told to leave, et cetera, et cetera. You got Shador Sanders sitting there responding, calling former teammates mid, which that's a word I don't even use because I just feel weird saying it. I feel like we need to retire that word already. I'm tired of it. But what do you make of this at this point?
Yeah, it's certainly a unique model when you think about Colorado. I mean, if you're going to bottom line it, I would say the visibility of the program has been greatly increased in the brand. And, you know, they ended up obviously flailing at the end of the year. You remember when they beat TCU and it's here they come, and then they just kind of they didn't really do much. Even that was an improvement, right? So they have improved the program as far as the types of talents they're attracting. They've certainly made noise with how they've constructed the roster. Deion Sanders, a very unique individual with how he runs the program. You've got him basically refusing to do in-home visits, which is a strategy that's worked sometimes. You've got apparently Shador and somebody else kind of like acting as the pseudo recruiting department by, hey, DM me if you want to play at Colorado type of thing. Maybe that's been blown out of proportion a little bit. It's very unique. And I don't know, man, it's hard to figure out where to land on it. Cause on one hand, I'm like, that doesn't seem sustainable to run a program like that, where you've got 40 guys transfer out and 40 guys transfer in every year. Will it continue like that? I don't know. I tend to think of like in 2024, you can run your program like that. Like, you're allowed to. The mark for me of the sustainability is, will they win enough games, you know, to do that? It's kind of, you know, to bottom line it. So it's definitely a unique model that I would say nobody else is doing in terms of all the different things that Deion's put in or has not put in. But I don't know. What do you think?
I was here for the party at first. Like, I very much have enjoyed it. But at the same time, I think there are certain things lacking at this point from it to make it sustainable. Like, I think you can be a famous head coach like Deion Sanders and use that to your advantage and recruit and stuff like that off of that name, while also, you know, doing things differently than just average coach A who comes into a program. But there are still certain things I think you have to do to be successful in college football. One, I would think, would be getting on the road and getting out and recruiting and going into a home. And, you know, maybe that's overblown. Maybe he feels like he can connect with parents about their kids and his future players with a visit at the university, that it's just not necessary. But I do, you know, go back to what Don Staley told us this morning on 107.5 in terms of recruiting five-star talents and getting them all to buy in to playing under one roof. And she said, you got to over-communicate. You got to communicate to the player what's expected of them and how they fit in. You got to communicate to their parents about what's expected. You got to tell their trainer who's helping them on the side. You got to tell their grandma. You got to tell everybody that will listen, hey, this is what's expected of you, and this is your role right now. And then if that's not for you, then, you know, we will shake your hand, but this program may not be for you. I think when you bring in a bunch of high-profile guys and there's that little bit of sort of just disconnect and idea that Deion's above the program, that his, you know, his both of his kids, one of them's running the offense, one's running the defense, and I don't know that it works unless you're winning. Like if you're still just winning a bunch of games, that glosses over everything. But as we saw last year, once you start losing some, then it does. People start pointing fingers. You start having outside articles written like this, and you have issues then. Now, I mean, who's to say that it can't work? We've all been surprised before. I know I'll be watching Colorado this year, which is more than I could say prior to this past season. So it's a net win for college football fan A. What's it mean moving forward? I don't know.
Yeah, they and this year will really be the test, right? Because if they go 4-8 this year, maybe even 5-7, but if it's kind of a flop, the amount of articles, like you pointed out, being written will increase dramatically. You know, people will say, hey, it's official now. This model doesn't work, or this thing is not working. And then we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, you look over their schedule, Wes, they play a pretty decent schedule. I mean, they got five teams ranked in the top 20 on the schedule. They got to go to Nebraska. Hey, they're opening with North Dakota State, which is a great program at that level. So we'll see how it goes. It's definitely fascinating. I thought Staley made some great points like you brought up. I mean, it made me think of, I talked to actually another Staley, no relation, Josh Staley, who coached Colin Murray Boyles in high school at Flora. And, you know, we had a great talk one day about that and just communicating expectations to parents and kids and kind of building that trust with them. And he just said, look, you've got to communicate those things, because parents, especially, they're looking at their kid and they want to be an advocate, but, you know, they're not always necessarily, we don't want our kids to fail. You know, we're so, as parents, you know, sometimes that's what we try to do. And you got to look at it in a more holistic, whole team sense. So Don Staley has obviously done a great job of that. It seems like a different model at Colorado for sure. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Hey, Nathan makes a good point. You said this earlier, Chris. They were improved this year, so nobody can say they weren't.
That's right.
I think the question is it sustainable? At what point does Deion get bored, frankly, because he's got everything else you could possibly want. At this point, you're coaching because you love and want to coach, I think. And can they take another step? They obviously are improved, and they've got way more talent than they had when Deion arrived. So we'll see what that looks like moving forward. And again, we'll all be watching, which I think is saying something. If you're a Colorado fan, you're equally excited, concerned, but you're paying attention. Like, I wish I ran a Colorado on 3 message board. I'll tell you that, because
you're right about
people
that.
Are clicking, man. You know who you should not be concerned about, though, would be our friends over at Liberty Tax. And, Chris, tax time officially over. But, for one, if you haven't filed your taxes, Liberty Tax and our friends over there, they can help you out. and because there's some things you're going to need to do. And then for two, if your taxes were a struggle this year, maybe you want to let somebody else help you out for next year. And you can call this number and you can go ahead and get a head start on planning for next year's taxes so that they aren't quite as much of a headache.
Yeah, absolutely. Larry and his team at Liberty Tax do a great job. They've helped my family. They can help yours too, 803-462-5576. Yeah, if you haven't done your taxes for last year, Wes, you should probably get on that. So Larry can help you figure out, okay, Larry, didn't do my taxes. What do I do? He can help you solve those problems. He can also help you plan ahead, which I recommend for next time. If you're a business owner, if you're married, if you're single, whatever bucket you fall into, he can help you out. He'll do a great job. He has a lot of experience with all things tax related.
No doubt. All right, y'all, that's going to do it for today. Here, let me get this graphic off there. Great show. Enjoyed it. Lots to talk about. And I guess Mike will probably be back on tomorrow. Then Chris and I will probably be back on beginning of next week, Monday, unless something crazy, unless there's breaking news in between. But in the meantime, come check us out, GamecockCentral.com. $1, 2 months, special code SCAR1. Many of you already subscribers, we appreciate you. But if you've been thinking about coming over, come on over, hang out with us, and then let's talk about the Gamecocks on our message boards and everything, anything in between, all the sports. Baseball starting to cook a little bit, maybe finding some momentum. Of course, transfer portal stuff, basketball. Got a big addition with Nick Pringle. Still trying to add a guard. We'll have plenty on that, too, once we get more names. So, lots going on, even though it's May. And then, of course, the big recruiting month now for South Carolina and everybody is June. 3 big weekends then. Camps going on. So, plenty to get to before we get to the preseason and the 2024 football season. For Chris, I'm Wes. Hope y'all enjoyed it, and y'all have a good one.